Thank you for joining in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking today about boys and girls and how they learn. Do they learn differently? I think they do, and I bet that our guest does as well. Florence Flo Hilliard, director of the Gender Studies Project in the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. She coordinates the annual conference on Boys and Girls at Risk, the Emerging Science of Gender Differences. And she's a project manager of the Wisconsin Women's Education Network on Addiction and Recovery. The conference meets June 16th and 17th at Madison Marriott West. So we're really pleased to have her with us today to talk about boys and girls, what are those differences as far as learning goes, and take your questions and comments as well as we move along today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have some thoughts on it or some questions. I hope you'll join us. Flo Hilliard, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's really great. You know, to have you here, I've, father of four girls, so...
Yes, you had mentioned that before the show.
But I was a boy, and I've noticed little boys in action. Our youngest is 5 and a half. So, what are the studies say about the differences between boys and girls?
Well, it's an interesting story for me also. Being a late-in-life mom, and I have a boy, and I grew up with all-boy cousins and brothers and was very much a tomboy myself, but realized, something innately tells me I need to learn a little bit more about raising boys. And I found a fascinating book called The Wonder of Boys by an author named Michael Gurian. And this was when he was still a baby, so it was 14 years ago now. And mm-hmm. It really was an eye-opener for me because he talked about what we were starting to learn from brain science at that time, which was, fairly new, but some things that were out in terms of what happens actually when the brain's developing, when a boy and girl are in childhood, adolescence. Some things like, for example, in childhood, the areas of the brain in a girl and a little girl, in terms of language and fine motor skills, develop more quickly than mm-hmm. they do for the little boy. At the same time, though, the little boy's areas of his brain that have to do with targeting, like throwing things, objects through space and time, spatial memory kinds of things, and large motor skills are developing faster in their brain than in little boys than in little girls' brains. And it, when you think about what you observe in terms of play behavior, it seems to make some sense.
Sure.
And then in adolescence, there's just so much, but just a few little examples is that we know that overall, women have a little easier capacity because of the brain structure and the way it's coordinated and the way, everything works, of being able to integrate negative emotions or what we call hard emotive data, things that come in that have a lot of emotion to them, and be able to integrate that up into the cognitive areas of the brain. So a woman could be very tearful and feeling very emotional, but be able to talk about it at the same time. The male brain takes a little longer to do that. Especially, though, in adolescence, what they found is that for girls' brains that have experienced a negative emotion, they've actually seen the activity go to that part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, it's called, that mm-hmm. processes that in terms of language. For adolescent boys, it stays down in sort of that fight or flight, the amygdala. Everybody hears about the amygdala nowadays. It's that fight or flight part of the brain, and where it's much more emotional, much more reactional. That's where the emotion kind of tends to sit. So when you ask a boy, well, what are you feeling? And they say, I don't know what I'm feeling. They probably really don't. They don't at that moment.
So that has all of that research. And a lot of this research, by the way, is pretty new. There hasn't been, this conference, for example, that you've held now a few times.
Right. I started out actually as part of a state grant looking at some adolescent issues around treatment. And so I was able to carve out a little piece that I wanted to look at boys because they still make up, the vast majority of the juvenile justice system. They're the majority of the dropouts mm-hmm. in high school.
Sure.
They're not going to college. I wanted to look at, what exactly is going on. So I brought in a man by the name of Dr. Sachs who wrote a book called Why Gender Matters. He's been a family physician for 18 years. And he's also a PhD psychologist, which is kind of unusual. And I read his book, and I was absolutely loved it. And it's all research-based. And so I brought him in about 4 years ago just to talk about boys. And I thought, let's just see what's out there. Is there any interest in talking about Boys at Risk? And I thought if I get 100 people, you know, to come together for a day and
be great.
It'd be great. Well, we had to close it off at 320 people. We had to go into another room. We were simulcasting. It was amazing. So then, 3 years later, I've expanded it, and now we do look at Boys and Girls at Risk. Ironically, much of this information is new and expanding. It's exploding. The brain research right now is absolutely exploding. Mm. But a lot of that basic research has actually been out since the late 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Some of this basic research, it just hasn't gotten much attention.
Hasn't gotten much attention.
Yeah.
I know that. I've heard that boys, for example, don't hear as well as girls.
Yes, that's actually...
And that would have some impact in the classroom.
It does. It can. You know, if you look at little boys and little girls in, say, a kindergarten classroom, and you think about the fact that little boys tend to not hear as well out of, I believe it's the left ear versus the right ear, and also they have a much... shorter attention span. So you put that little boy in a classroom of kindergartners where 30 years ago it used to be about, you know, getting along, putting some beads on a string, taking a nap, having some, you know, and things were okay. But now if you look at it, they have to sit still longer. They're in the back of the classroom. They have a young teacher, a young female. She may have a high voice, which they don't hear, not only hear as well, they don't hear as many tones. They don't hear the range of tones as well as little girls' brains do at that age. And that's been clearly proven. So they start getting finicky. They can't really hear every word the teacher's saying, and it's much more fun to poke Jimmy with a pencil than it is to listen to the teacher. And all of a sudden, before he knows it, there he is. He's in trouble for, you know, he's not sitting still. He's not behaving. Really what it was is he was getting bored. He couldn't really hear and he couldn't process.
Has the kindergarten, let's talk about that young age, has the kindergarten curriculum changed at all to sort of meet some of these
No, we're just starting to talk about the fact that the kindergarten curriculum needs to look at gender differences and needs to look at the fact that there are many boys that have their large motor skills and don't have their fine motor skills. It's just a topic that is starting to be looked at and talked about.
Mm-hmm. And this whole business of attention, you begin to wonder if there are boys, for example, being labeled as ADD, for example, or ADHD.
Right. There's some very interesting studies that just have come out, one particularly out of Harvard University, that showed that in this particular study, the vast majority of boys that were going late into puberty, in other words, they were, you know, their brain was maturing quite slowly, were also being labeled as ADHD. And yet in girls, it was something like 1 out of 3. And in girls, it was 1 in 30 girls who were in late puberty were getting. So the vast majority of kids who are on ADHD medication are males, actually, in our country.
And maybe not rightfully so?
Well, you know, you hate to say that, you know, the kids don't need to be on this. Some boys absolutely probably do need to be on ADHD medication. What's happening, though, is that, you know, people like Dr. Sachs and Michael Gurian are asking for us to really relook at this whole issue before we are so quick to give out medications and before we are giving them out at such young ages. There's just lots of evidence to look at the fact that this might not necessarily be the case. It might be that the boy just needs more activity. His brain is slower and maturing, so we need to look at a lot of other issues also.
Mm. Danielle from Madison emailed us and says, as a female engineer, I was often the only woman in my class in college. I found many of my male peers were drawn to engineering due to building and fixing things when they were younger, which I never did, she said. You think learning is affected by gender roles?
Yes, I think that actually does play an important role in that. And one of the things that Dr. Sachs talked about in his book, Why Gender Matters, that got me really thinking about this a lot and looking and exploring it a lot more, is that, you know, he is very much, in fact, he created the National Association for Single-Sex Education. And when you hear about single-sex education, you know, at least through elementary and middle school, and you think, wow, putting boys in one class and girls in another, you know, that seems so sexist. That doesn't seem like that's going to work. But he makes a really strong argument and looks all around the world. He's traveled all over the world, makes a really strong argument for the fact that a lot of co-ed education nowadays actually perpetrates gender stereotypes. In other words, when you put adolescent boys and girls together, you're not going to find an adolescent boy, for example, playing the flute. It's not what boys do, not when they're in a co-ed classroom. You just hardly ever see it. But when you look at, he looked at many all-boys schools and many all-girls schools, and he found that really it was much better for girls and boys to step out of those gender stereotypes and do things in ways that they might not have felt comfortable doing or experimenting with or talking about or, you know, studying when they were in co-ed classrooms.
Very interesting. Flo Hilliard, our guest today, as we talk about boys and girls and how they learn and how they learn differently. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's take some calls. Chris in Columbus up first here. Chris, hi. Hey. Thanks for calling.
You betcha. Great show. Love the topic. I just wanted to welcome the guest to the table. This information she's talking about has been new news to me. It's been out in the conservative Christian press for 20 to 30 years. I would refer your guest to Dr. James Dobson and his books, Bringing Up Boys, and the New Dare to Discipline.
Well, that, you know, you're right. That is true. I believe that different groups of people have been talking about looking at this, you know, in ways that we used to look at it. What we're trying to say, I think, and what the research is showing is that we don't want to perpetrate gender stereotypes. Of course, what we do want to do, though, is we want to take a look at the brain science, and we want to take a look at the culture, and we want to see, is the culture helping in some ways it may be, or is the culture hurting, which in other ways it very much is. And, you know, we want to be able to say that we certainly don't want to say things like, well, women need to stay home and that's what they have to do. They need to have choices and they need to be able to feel free with those choices. But the same thing is true for males also. And and males and females in a lot of ways at a time when we talk about, you know, women stepping out and getting careers and men being able to be more sensitive, we actually have, if you look at the culture in general and the media reflection of it, we have more gender stereotypes perpetrated in the media right now than we ever have.
Probably. But as you look at, say, the public schools, let's take a look at the public, or even the privates for that matter. I mean, the public schools, you don't find public schools where the genders are separated.
Right. And yet, one of the things that happened with the new act that came out of the federal government is that many more schools are actually looking at this.
They are looking at it.
Yes. And there have been, one of the workshops that we're doing at this conference that I'm having is a school system in Janesville that decided to try it. They had Dr. Sachs come in and do some training, because you can't just take boys and throw them in a classroom and girls and throw them in a classroom. You have to also understand their learning styles, and make it voluntary. Nobody wants to, make something mandatory that everybody has to do the same thing, because then we're really perpetrating some old stuff here. But what they found is they tried it in one grade and they loved it. And then the parents loved it. And there were people, of course, that were a little skeptical. Then they went to, and now they've just gone, the whole middle school has gone single sex, and because so many people like it. And again, it's voluntary, but the vast majority of parents choose. And they found that they've had really good success. DeLand, Florida is another one. They actually had testing rates go up. They had, you know, all kinds of really positive things happen. Toledo, Ohio, they're doing it there too. So a lot of public school systems actually.
That are getting into it. Well, that's good.
Absolutely.
That's good to know. And thanks, Chris, for calling. Our guest today, Flo Hilliard, director of the Gender Studies Project at the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. We've got a conference coming up on June 16th at 17th at the Madison Marriott West in Middleton to talk about the emerging science of gender differences. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking your questions and comments here as we talk about whether or not, or how, boys and girls learn differently. It's not whether. They really do learn differently. Flo Hilliard, our guest, and the number to call for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@wpr.org. And we'll go to Peter in Milwaukee next. Peter, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. And finally, I have someone who can talk to my wife about my listening problems. Just kidding. Yeah, I think I had a little bit of problem when I was a kid hearing the teacher. And also, I felt like I always had to get up and move around a little bit. You know, I think boys seem to be, obviously, you know, they learn differently, and they do so much better if they're more, they can get up, move around, walk around a little bit.
Absolutely.
You know, I felt that I needed that a lot.
Yeah, you know, one of our daughter has been in a Montessori school, and in the Montessori school system, students do actually walk
yes.
around. They have different learning areas, and they, mm-hmm. they go and spend time on math in one area, and then they can go and do some reading in another area, and they get a chance really to kind of choose a little bit. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful environment, Montessori, because it really does. It allows children to sort of learn innately from their own style. So if children need to get up and move around, they're more tolerant of that kind of thing. If children like to sit and like to, concentrate and be, they're more tolerant of that. They're just more tolerant of individual learning styles. And one of the things that has, there's so many things. Another thing about the male brain is that when they tend to focus on something, the male brain is able to tune out a lot of sort
other
of
things.
Yeah, exterior and, all the periphery kind of data coming into them. Females take more of it in. And, you can go into lots of discussion about from an evolutionary standpoint, the women were at the village and they were raising not only their child, they were raising other children. They had to be in very close contact with other women. They had to be able to take in lots of sensory data in order to, survive and make the village work. Men were out on hunting gathering parties. They had to be quiet. They had to mm-hmm. focus. They had to all those spatial things. And so, what you find is that, when men are very focused on something, a lot of times a wife can be, and I know I did this when I learned this, it was very helpful for me when my little boy was only 5 and 6 years old. If he was watching a particular his show on TV and I would walk up and I was a little too far away and I would say, Zach, and he wasn't really ignoring me. I didn't take mm-hmm. it personal. He was so focused. And I remember one time I walked up and finally got almost right next to him and said, Zach, and he was startled, like, oh my gosh, where did you come from?
Oh man. Peter, thank you for calling. Mike in Milwaukee, we want to give you a chance. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, all these correlations are just observations. They're not hard science. This is, let's look at it and see what we think. So your conclusions are basically conclusions, and they're not particularly hard science theories. Now, I think you're in the same position that people studying genes were in about 1880, where all you could do is observe and write down, which led to eugenics, of course, which led to the Third Reich. And I got to tell you, as genetics grows, this nurture versus nature thing will be further defined. I notice that when I go to kids' birthday parties, if you have a little kid, if it's a female, she gets female toys. She gets a little cooking set and tea set. And the boys, of course, get a shoot 'em up Nintendo or whatever was the latest thing. And then all through high school, we boys play football and so on and so forth. We don't know what's nature and what's nurture. We can say that there's various chemicals like oxytocin and vasopressin that might be different at different times in different sex genders, but the XY chromosome mystery is still there.
Well, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a very, very good comment. And it is, I will say that we have a lot to learn. We have an awful lot to learn. And really what I think the scientists are looking at right now is not, you're right, it's not nature versus nurture. We're looking at nature dancing with nurture and how the environment impacts development. And we know now that there are, from great research, that there are genes that can be turned on and genes that can be turned off by the environment and lifestyle and all those kinds of factors that play into our everyday life. However, I would ask the caller to, before he makes sort of that general leap, to read just two books, The Wonder of Boys, which came out 14 years ago and talks very much about the brain science, and also the book called Why Gender Matters by Dr. Leonard Sachs. It is all brain research based. based. And one of the most exciting things we can do right now is we can look at the brain in a way we never could before. We can take snapshots of the brain as it's thinking, as it's feeling, as it's completing tasks when it has drugs injected into it. And we're seeing more and more. It's irrefutable. We're seeing more and more. The more we look, the more differences we are seeing. And I'm not saying that culture doesn't play in on that. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that it is irrefutable that we know there are differences in the male and female brain, and this has been known for 30 years. We're just finding more and more of them.
Thanks for calling, Mike. I want to give some others a chance to get on here. Phyllis in Greenfield, we'll let you join in the conversation here. Phyllis, hi.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Phyllis.
How are you?
Great.
I have a few observations that I made. I taught in California, fourth grade, and I have a propensity to like boys more than girls, so I had to bend over backwards so I didn't show any favoritism to them, and then I ended up being their PE boys instructor,
wow,
which was really hard.
Wow.
But it was interesting because the boys are a little bit, I shouldn't say slower, but they have a different way of seeing things than girls do. The girls are real eager to please. The boys are kind of laid back. And they seem to be more engaged in motor parts of their body to learn than girls. Mm-hmm. Girls are more perceptive, I think. Mm-hmm. And I had an interesting time with these children. They were so different. But one of the things that I did find out is that if children can laugh in a classroom, it means all the difference in the world to
yes,
the rapport that you have.
Yes. Good point.
Interesting comments. Any comment on Phyllis's comments about the skills of the kids? Sounds like pretty much going along with what we've observed in research.
Right. It really is. And you know, again, the fact that we know now, for example, when we talk about brain maturation, when we talk about little boys and little girls and their brain actually maturing, there's been some phenomenal studies now that have come out of the National Institute of Health. Dr. Jay Geed is, you know, one of the gurus in this area. And they've been looking at, he was supposed to be studying the brains of children with ADHD. And so when he went to find the brain scans of normal children out in the research to compare it to, he found there were none for adolescent.
Oh.
So he had to back up and say, okay, we need to do this very differently. We need to know what it looks like to see the adolescent brain from, you know, say 10, 11, 12 up until at that time they were looking at 16. Now they're looking up to 22 years old. And they were astounded to find how much the brain changes. And very clearly now, study that some of his work and others, obviously, from around the world that have come out that have been working together on this for the last 15 years have shown definite differences in the trajectories of the way the male and female brain matures and the parts of the brain that mature first and the parts mm-hmm. of the brain that don't and all those kind of things. So, yeah, it's very true. If you talk, I have a lot of friends who are teachers and they, you know, sort of behind the scenes will say, yeah, I think it would be great to be able to just have boys and girls separated out, at least in middle school.
Phyllis, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Lori a chance to get on from De Pere, though. So let's go to Lori. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question regarding disabilities in children. I have 5 children, 2 girls and 2 and 3 boys, so I definitely can attest to the differences. And our oldest is a girl. Our 2 oldest are girls. The very oldest is the one who is plagued with learning disabilities. And listening to your program today, I've often thought that, and when I look back when she was a young child, she mimicked more of a boy's style in everything she did. And in her learning, her fine motor skills were delayed compared to the others, the other girls that were in the neighborhood and so forth. And she was more, she relied more on movement and activity mm-hmm. rather than sitting down and coloring with her sister. She would be the one to always run and get all the supplies so that they can color. And by the time she got back, her sister was done coloring, and so then she never got to color. But I'm wondering if if because of her disabilities, if her brain, you know, has there been any research on how, you know, the possibility of her brain being wired
right.
more like a boy?
Right. You know, it's very complicated. The brain, you know, we're obviously more alike than we are different. I mean, I obviously we need to say that. We're more, mm-hmm. the brain of a human being is generally the same. It doesn't, because the brain is so much more infinitely complicated than we ever thought it would be, it doesn't take much to create, like we say, the differences, disabilities, you know, all those kind of things. So, you know, there could be, I guess my answer is there could be research that is looking specifically at that kind of data. I'm not really aware of it, but I do know that there are certain kinds of things that can happen in utero, hormonal cascades that need to happen at a certain time. I don't know if the general audience is aware of the fact that, you know, every baby, no matter what their chromosomal makeup is, starts out as a female. And, you know, certain things have to happen at the correct time. Testosterone has to happen at the correct time if you have the correct male chromosomal makeup to become a male. If it doesn't happen, it's called timed exposure. If that doesn't happen at exactly the correct time while in utero, you will end up by, and I don't mean this in any way because I am one, by default a female. Mm-hmm. This is just the way that it is. And so that in itself creates a whole dynamic, a whole different dynamic that we really don't understand in the brain. A very famous actress is by chromosome a female, and she found this out when she realized that she couldn't have children. She was sterile, but no one would know it to see her, and that's Jamie Lee Curtis. She actually is by chromosome. So there's a lot of different ways I'm sure that this kind of research will be going in the future because, like I say, it's just really exploding right now. And the federal government is funding, you know, research to look at how the brain develops.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate the call. And Dieter in Elm Grove, I believe it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, yes. I just had a brief question and a comment. For me, I've found that my learning from elementary through high school, I think I've learned more in the first 3 years of college than in all those years combined. And I was wondering if does the content that they learn as a child is younger really matter so much as maybe the social skills and interacting with members of the opposite sex?
Well, I think what we look at is it. I don't know if it's content or if it's the way the content is presented.
Oh.
Most experts agree that right now the general model of education is geared toward a female brain. And that is, you know, having to take in lots and lots and lots of data through talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher does most of the talking. The student takes in most of the information. We're talking in high school, let's say, in middle school right now. I know because my son is very much struggling with the whole thing. And one of the things that he says is, I like this teacher. I like the subject, but she talks too much, Mom. She just talks and talks and talks. This is in science, for example, rather than what he'd like to do, which, you know, is what many boys like to do, is they'd like to just jump in and start doing something to be able to learn. So, unfortunately, we've gotten away from a little bit anyway, from, you know, having sort of more of a balance of the learning through taking in communication and talking and learning through actually doing or experiencing. I think that when you get into college, you have more choices. You have more choices of what you want to do, how you want to do it, what you want to take. And if you don't like something, you can go in another direction. In high school, you pretty, and in middle school, you pretty much don't have very much choice.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And Peggy in Helenville, will on to you next. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. My question really just follows what you were just talking about, and it has to do with the current system really benefiting, I think, the way kids learn. I have 3 boys. My youngest is 17. My older other two, one's 25, one's 23. But I struggled always with them, with the way the school, and especially by the time they're in high school, they don't value the kids, the boys, how important academics is and their grade point average. And so as a result, and especially this last one, his GPA, you know, is less than stellar, shall we say. And I, you know, no matter what I do or say, if I followed him to school, it's closing doors on his future, and that really bothers me because because I don't understand why our system is doing that. If we sort of do understand that kids are learn different, mature differently, and the other two have made it through, and actually one just graduated with a chemical engineering degree Saturday from Madison. The other guy's mechanical. So somehow they did, those two did pull themselves together and get through college. But this guy, his, you know, is certainly, I don't know, if, I mean, I suppose he'll get into somewhere. But my question is, what are the resources for parents of boys who, you know, who, I mean, you know, they're all bright kids, but they're failing, the system's failing them. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you one question? Does your son like things like sports, or does he like things, is he, you know, sort of physically active, or is he in that way, or does he like other things? What does he like besides actually, you know, what she doesn't like at school right now?
Yeah.
Well, he likes some things in school, but he seems to just sort of like that other, you know, you were saying, you know, like he really likes to take the honors courses but doesn't do well in them. I'm like, Stuart, then don't take the honors course.
Okay. That's an interesting concept. And actually, one of the things it's important to understand is in all this adolescent research that has been done, this developmental research from childhood all the way through, it's very, very, very clear that the female brain is about a year and a half to sometimes 2 years ahead in brain maturation than the male brain is. And again, you know, you could go into all kinds of theories as to why that may be, but the point is, it's very clear. It's been shown very clearly in many studies all around the world. So when you look at, you know, at young women succeeding in high school, their brain is literally more mature than a male brain is to begin with. And then you have to take into account that in terms of just looking at males, their brains vary also in how slow or fast they mature, just from the male standpoint. You know, they're already behind girls' brains. But then, like I said, you know, boys that have been diagnosed with ADHD very often have very slow maturing brains. So, you know, in that way, I think they need sometimes more guidance. I know my 14-year-old acts very, you know, very mature 1 minute, and then sometimes I'm on the phone with him and I'm thinking, is he 7 again or is he 14? He's just, he's got a little bit of a slower maturing brain, I'm sure. But so what I do is I try to find things that are, that he is interested in that I can relate back. Boys do real well with stories. If, you know, if he knows how it is to succeed in something, not take it on, for example, we use soccer a lot because that's his love. He loves to play soccer, and he's at a very high competitive level already. So we've actually taught him many life lessons about, you know, succeeding. How did you get as good as you are? You practiced and practiced and practiced. How did you do this? We relate a lot of things to something that he can relate to that has to do more with, you know, how his brain, you know, operates. I don't know if that helps at all, but we don't have really a lot of resources out there that, you know, that we can just tap into really quickly.
Peggy, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call very much. It is a problem. I'd like you to talk a little bit, Flo, about the conference that you've got coming up and what all will be discussed at this conference.
Well, this conference is for, I really say that it's for everybody. I mean, even parents, I think I've had parents that have looked at this and said, wow, I need to go to this because this really has a lot to do with, you know, what I would like to hear about. We are covering everything in this conference from the general idea is to look at it from a little more gender sensitive perspective in terms of helping kids that are at risk. And so we have everything from a professor coming in to talk about the use of media today, the use of things like cell phones and electronics and those, the internet, and how that's different for boys and girls and how that can be risky and how we know when it's getting risky when we're, you know, working with a boy or a girl or looking at boys or girls. We have two counselors that are coming in that have developed a whole model of how do you parent boys, you know, especially if you're a mom and you don't have that, you know, that other piece in there. You know, what is it? Are your sons driving you crazy? You know, how can you come in and learn? And especially for counselors working with single moms. So We talk about gangs. We have Boys Town coming in, and they have a program not only for boys but for girls. And they specifically separate boys and girls at Boys Town from very high-risk boys and girls because they find that that just works better. And so we're going to talk to them. The Janesville panel that's coming in that started the Single Sex and Loves It down in Janesville education. So we try to hit a lot of different pieces and different interests, things that we're looking at.
And can is it open to anyone to attend?
Oh, absolutely. It sure is. It's open for anyone to attend. And if you would like more information, you can just go to the website and find out a lot more detailed information. It's just www.boysgirls, that's one word, boysgirls-atrisk. It's all one word. And then it's .org. So it's boysgirls-atrisk.org. And you can find out and you can read what all the workshops are about, you know, if they think that they might be interesting to you. We're having the deputy director come in from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, Dr. Tim Condon. And he's going to be talking about, some of the research. And he's a wonderful man. I've heard him speak. He keeps it very easy to understand and what we're looking at to try to help adolescents nowadays. And then another woman that I'm really excited about, Dr. Klein from the University of Colorado and Children's Hospital, and she put together, she was one of the principal investigators to bring together a study of people. She brought primatologists, psychiatrists, people, child development specialists like Barry Brazelton. I mean, they're really well known to talk about where are we going? What are we seeing in adolescence today? And then they wrote some 16 commission papers from it. One of the things that they didn't even plan on studying, but said we can't not look at it because it kept coming up over and over and over in this 2-year study was gender differences, sex differences, and how culture plays into that and how it plays out. And so she's going to come and talk about some of that, and that if we ignore it, we're really doing a disservice to our kids.
Well, Joyce emailed us and said she taught fifth grade class, all girls. It was amazing. And then she taught mixed classes at the same time. So sometimes she would be teaching all girls, sometimes mixed, and then sometimes all boys.
Oh, interesting.
She was definitely in favor of single-sex teaching.
You find a lot of teachers will say that under the table.
Mark in Janesville may have a comment. Mark, hi.
Yes, sir. I am a parent of some of those kids at the Janesville panel.
Oh,
and,
great.
And I will tell you, it's just absolutely delightful. I had my oldest is 18, so he went through before that. And my middle kid is a boy. He is in the sex classes. They absolutely hated the idea when they proposed it. And 6 weeks into it, they loved it. The teachers loved it. The kids just respond so differently at that age. And we actually adopted it at our Sunday school, the kids love it there.
That's wonderful.
And when you're talking about the brain development,
yes,
I'm always reminded of the intuitive intelligence of Mark Twain, who said that when I was 18, my father was a dunce, but by the time I got to be 21, he was brilliant.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Thank you for that comment.
Mark, thank you very much for that comment. It's a great way to end up. But I do want to go back to the website, because if people are interested, it's boysgirls-atrisk.org. Boysgirls-atrisk.org.
And I'm sure if you just put Boys and Girls at Risk Conference Madison, it'll pop up if you Google it, if you can't remember anything else. You know how wonderful Google is nowadays.
All right. Well, that's June 16th and 17th at the Madison Marriott West in Middleton.
Yes.
Flo, great pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd love to have you back again.
That would be a lot of fun. I would love it.
Florence Hilliard is director of the Gender Studies Project in the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies, coordinator of the annual conference on Boys and Girls at Risk, the Emerging Science of Gender Differences, and she's project manager at the Wisconsin Women's Education Network on Education and Recovery. So we're really pleased to have her with us, and it's a topic that I've always been interested in, too. So I think we'll try and follow up on this. Thanks again, Flo.
Thank you.
And, boy, we're going to switch gears entirely. Talk about a couple of guys that are wild and crazy. We've got Mad Dog and Merrill coming up next to talk with us about grilling. When you're in that grilling mode, we haven't reached them yet, I see. But we will have them on. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.